Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times. Now with goals.
Hello and welcome to The Game, the football podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti. Now, before we begin, you can catch the highlights from every Premier League game before anyone else simply by downloading The Times app to your smartphone. And also, quick reminder that you can see taping of the Game Podcast Roadshow live in the great city of Liverpool. And yes, I'm contractually bound to say that given who my boss is. It's at the Playhouse Theatre on the 6th of March. Tickets cost £5 for Times Plus members and £7.50 for non-members. To book, visit www.ctickets.com/thetimes, or you can do it the old-fashioned way and call 0871-620-4025. Enough of that. Now we have our guest, and I am delighted to be joined by Clive Petty. Down the line, the excellent Jim Proudfoot, who lives in a place called Andover, and, of course, Rory K. Smith. First up, take a look at Chelsea and Everton.
Chelsea in the now or never land. Lampard, Howard's dropped it, Terry scored! Right at the death, John Terry claims the goal.
And now, before we get into the game at Stamford Bridge, Rory, I know you were there, so was I. I need to ask you about this. Lukaku is an Everton player on loan, and the Premier League have this regulation, which actually doesn't actually exist in most countries. In most countries, two teams can get together and agree what they want to agree, whereby he's not allowed to play against his parent club, Chelsea. It seems to me like it's a stupid, stupid rule. It doesn't help the integrity of competition, and I don't see, is it some sort of legacy that they think Lukaku won't try hard against his parent club because he's still owned by them? Or what's the logic?
As I say, I assume it's to avoid the embarrassment of Lukaku scoring against Chelsea, which, of course, Chelsea wouldn't want. I don't like the idea that players can be loaned to clubs within the same division anyway. You either play for one club. That's not the point of the loan system, in my opinion. Helping lower teams.
No, the point of
players
develop
amongst lower teams.
But surely the point of the loan system isn't just to help lower league teams. It's to help players develop. So if I've got a player at Manchester United and he's a young player and he doesn't get enough playing time, I can loan him out to a high standard. What better standard could there be than the Premier League?
And it's he's at the team that, you know, a couple of seasons ago won.
If he can't get on the pitch at Chelsea, then imagine if he were English. Would it change if he were English? Right? You're an England fan, right?
Am I an England fan? I'll wear that hat. Yeah, okay, I'm an England fan.
Finally,
make a difference
if
he was English. I'm not. Not in my opinion, no.
I think that is the problem, not that that is what the loan system is partly for. It's partly to enable smaller clubs to have access to players they couldn't otherwise get, but it's also to enable players to develop with regular first-team action so that they are more ready to play for the larger clubs. the problem is at the moment, and it's not just Chelsea who do it, that the bigger clubs are taking it, are running it by the letter of the law, if not by the spirit. So Chelsea have got 30 players on loan. Yeah. Now, that looks to me, and again, it's not just Chelsea, this isn't an anti-Chelsea rant, it looks to me like they're stockpiling players, which deprives other clubs of having the chance to have those players, not just for a season. So Vitesse Arnhem have got all these great players that they've got for a season or two, but perhaps it would be better if those players hadn't moved to Chelsea, if they were developing at their original clubs, such as Lukaku or Anderlecht, so that they could kind of build their career slowly rather than go straight to the big club. Then the big club sort of loan them out here, there and everywhere, and of those 30, one or two might end up playing for Chelsea.
Well, it's a free market.
I don't have a problem with it. That's the rules as they stand, and it's fine. And Chelsea, it's quite an intelligent approach from Chelsea's point of view. I do wonder whether it's healthy to see. There's a line in your column today, Gab, in which you talk about the 12 clubs in Europe who have money. And that is true. There are basically 12, 15 clubs in Europe who have any sort of resources. Everyone else is completely reliant on various other means, whether it's loans or third parties. That's not entirely healthy. And I do wonder if clubs were prevented stockpiling these players, that might help a little bit.
To be fair, I mean, that is a conversation for another time. You're right. I mention it in my column in the context of third-party ownership. Bill Edgar also has some extraordinary stats in the game today about just the absolute freaking imbalance that we're careering towards in Europe. And by the way, that imbalance would exist here as well if Sheikh Mansour and Roman Abramovich hadn't decided to go and blow enormous amounts of money on their clubs. JP, I just want to get you on this. Are you okay with the loan system? Should the Premier League be a little sort of less weird about this and behave more like other more normal countries in terms of allowing players embarrassment side?
I'm okay about it. I think the system works all right as it is. And I understand the point that Clive made about the embarrassment of Lukaku scoring a goal against Chelsea. I think it's more the other way around. It's to prevent allegations if Lukaku missed the kind of chance that Dzeko missed, for instance, for Manchester City at the weekend. Now, if Lukaku misses that in a game for Everton against Chelsea, that opens up a complete can of worms, and everybody would say, oh yeah, the game's fixed, it's because he's on loan from Chelsea. I think this the rule as it stands at the moment negates that situation happening. I've actually not got a problem with it. It's unwieldy. I know that the Italians obviously have a different approach in Serie A, where there's a different approach to owning players in the first place, but you can then play against the club that you are, your parent club, if you like. I think that the system that we've got in England is the best of a bad job, really.
And I guess we're a lot more sort of pure and less cynical and less into our conspiracy theories in Italy, because that scenario you described of a player missing a goal against his parent club, I don't think that's ever happened in Italy. Let's talk about the game. Right, you were there. I thought this might have been one of Chelsea's worst performances of the season. It looked to me like Everton really had the upper hand. And it surprised me a little bit, because I thought Chelsea did well last time round. Now, if I were to put my Mourinho mask on, I would say we didn't play well, but we showed great spirit and perseverance and so on, and were rewarded in the end. Is that what happened?
Chelsea started quite well, Hazard particularly. Then Everton looked really nervous, and then they took control, and I think for an hour Everton were the better team. After about 65, 70 minutes, they sort of sat back a bit too much, and they started inviting Chelsea onto them. But to be honest, yeah, Chelsea didn't really look like they had any great ideas about how to break Everton down. They didn't look particularly creative. Hazard was very quiet. William was ineffective. Oscar, I was at Mourinho on Friday, the press conference, and Mourinho said a really strange thing for a manager to say, and I kind of see his point. He basically said that because of the floods, Oscar's not been playing well. And that made me wonder whether maybe Oscar lived in Datchet or somewhere and his garden was underwater. He was really worried. But it's not.
He lives in Bath.
Mourinho
Oscar.
Basically said, lives on the Somerset levels. He loves it on the levels. Mourinho basically said he'll play well when it's sunny, which is a really weird thing for a manager to say. And if it hadn't been for all the other shenanigans that were going on with Jose, a lot more would have been made of that. Oster looks really tired to me, and I think it was the right thing to take him off. I think he looks like he needs a break. But no, Chelsea overall didn't have much, and I think Everton deserved at least a point. But then it's the hallmark of champions, isn't it? Winning when you don't deserve it, and you've got that. When you've got players like Ivanovic, like Terry, and you know the delivery that Lampard and others can put in, you're going to... If you get a free kick in the 93rd minute, there's every chance you're going to score. So yeah, Chelsea weren't desperately impressive. They didn't. For a long time, it looked like it was the point in which everyone said, "Oh, this is where Chelsea's title aspirations have been blown up." But then they have this habit, don't they, of hanging on. It's very Mourinho, just to sort of conjure something from nothing at the very death.
And you talk about that set-piece delivery, it helps when you're good at winning free kicks in the 92nd, 93rd minute.
Yeah, well, Martinez made that point. He sort of said that Chelsea, he wouldn't go as far as to say they were diving, and he wouldn't go as far as to criticise Lee Probert, who I actually thought had an excellent game, Lee Probert, the referee.
I was disappointed that Lucina Traore, who I was curious to see in the flesh for only the second time ever, that he got injured in the warm-up. And then again, that led to Everton having this sort of weirdo, like, Morales-Naismith combination up front. Why didn't we see Deulofeu earlier? Is he not? I mean, it came on, but like, I was like, great, we get to see Deulofeu then. Instead of the big guy, I get to see the little skillful guy. But no, I didn't get to see either. I get to see freaking Naismith.
I thought Naismith did okay, to be fair. It works hard.
This speaks to the point of.
I don't think Deulofeu can lead a line.
As Deulofeu.
He's been injured.
He's been injured for. Yeah, well, no. Perhaps it wasn't the right being straight back in against Chelsea, perhaps.
No, I mean, and to be fair, I think it'd be harsh to criticise the way that Martinez reacted. It's always hard when you lose a player in the warm-up, but he reacted in such a way that led to Everton being the better side for vast periods of the game, so you can't really criticise
him. I mean, to be fair, unless you're the size of the Statue of Liberty, like Lucina Traore is, everybody's going to have trouble leading the line against Gary Cahill and John Terry, which brings up my point. They're talking about this on TV, Clive, that John Terry may be the best English defender this season. Are you, or central defender anyway, are you on board with that?
I'll have to take the opinion of my learned colleagues who've seen him play and compared him to the others and say if he's supposed to be having an outstanding season. Perhaps that is because he only has to worry about playing for Chelsea. But once in his life, that's his sole vision. He's performing well for his club. He doesn't have to worry about the travel to England or anything else, and he gets rested by Mourinho. I'm not sure how outstanding he's been, or is it he's just performing to John Terry-like standards? I'm not sure how appallingly bad he's ever been before, to be quite honest.
He's just being John Terry.
Yeah. All right, let me turn around and ask you then, Jim. Can you name an English central defender who's been better than John Terry this season?
No, absolutely not. And if everything that had happened and has been talked about at length and dissected hadn't happened, then John Terry would still be playing for England. And Terry and Cahill, on form, is the best centre-half partnership that Roy Hodgson could pick, in my opinion, in the World Cup.
But it isn't going to happen.
Will one half of that be there at least, in Cahill? Or
Yeah, I think so.
So Cahill and Jagielka, that's what we're going?
Yeah. But it should be Terry and Cahill.
Jadielka was also excellent on Saturday. None of these people were anywhere near as good as Sylvain Distan.
Yeah, well, it was, we have a soft spot for Sylvain Distan because he's like the biggest guy on the pitch, and he's also the fastest guy and the oldest guy.
He's like 104.
Well, it's funny because I watched the game with a former, I'm going to name drop here, with a former British Olympian, actually.
Sebastian Coe.
No, somebody who's a lot cooler and a lot more handsome than Sebastian freaking Coe. I watched it with a man named Dwayne Ledejo. Okay?
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah. What were you doing with Dwayne Ledejo? That's not really name dropping.
Well, because he's not.
It's a hell of a name.
It's a great name.
he happens to be a friend. And
I was in the press box with Chris Akabusi. Yeah.
Who do you think's faster?
That's another great name.
Dwayne or Chris?
Now?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go Ledejo.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Who's more handsome?
Well, it depends
not
on your taste.
Ledejo wins every time.
Exactly. So there. So it's 2-0 to Gab over Rory. Are you gonna stop name dropping now? Needlessly, the point I was going to make is he was explaining Sylvain Distan, and because I was asking him, like, you know, because obviously you're going to have this deterioration as you get older as an athlete, and although very helpfully our producer Dave McGuire has decided, even though you misspelled the name Dwayne Ledejo, well done, he managed to. We have a whole gallery of pictures of Dwayne Ledejo here, and bizarrely some kind of professional wrestler as well. Anyway, the point being here is that he was explaining that it's your fast twitch muscles deteriorate, but you can more than make up for it in other ways and in the way you train. And you may lose some initial quickness, but actually you get stronger. And if you do things properly, and he explained it very complicated, it all sounded very scientific. I thought it was interesting that you don't have to necessarily lose all your pace when you get older, I guess, is the message.
Of course, ironically, Gary Jacob was at the Norwich game with John Regis. So been a great weekend for random British Olympians.
I would suggest that Dwayne Ledejo is more handsome and faster than John Regis as well.
But who'd win in a fight?
Who would win in a fight?
that is a very good point. I want to throw this to Everton, though, just for another minute, because you try to project. You see where Everton have been. They've been in the top eight, I think, each of the last 5-6 years. This is going to be another season where they're going to get a lot of kudos for the way they play. Martinez is going to be wonderful. And in the summer, Lukaku and De La Feu are going to go. Gareth Barry, I'm assuming, will stick around. They may have to sell somebody. Is this a classic sort of treading water argument? If you were Roberto Martinez, would you try to get more Lukaku types on loan next season, or would you try a different approach?
Well, I think there was an interesting quote from Tim Howard. He spoke to Tony Barrett a couple of weeks ago and said that the problem that Everton have got is that the risk with Everton this season is that they're taking a different path to the same destination, and so they've got all this kudos and all this praise, which all of it deserved, for their new sort of more ambitious, more adventurous, more stylistic approach. But they will end up, it looks like, they do have a game in hand against Palace, but it looks like they'll end up finishing fifth or sixth, which is roughly where they've always finished. And that's a real shame, because they do deserve, you feel as though they deserve something a little bit more almost for the season they've had and for what they've done on the resources they've got. And you're right, it's a problem he's got the same problem that he had at Wigan, just at a much higher level, that you're probably going to have to sell a player. You're certainly going to lose the loan players you've got who've made such a difference. So he'll basically get to the summer having had this incredible season, and he will be in exactly the same position as he was at the start of this season.
Stevie Gerrard. It's a great ball by Gerrard to pick out Suarez. Beaten away by Williams. Henderson, second time! And Henderson scores his second goal of the game. Prior to today, Henderson had only scored twice this season. Now two in one game. But this was a present from Williams. 4-3, Liverpool ahead again.
Liverpool beat Swansea 4-3. A lot of goals. It's the kind of thing where people are going to curl up their nose and be like, oh, look, a lot of goals, but a lot of bad defending too. I thought there were obviously some individual mistakes in this game, but I didn't think the defending was as horrid as some people made out. And I thought there was actually some really, really good attacking play from both teams. Am I allowing myself to get caught up in the Premiership hype, Roy?
It's interesting that Rodgers has said that it's individual mistakes that can't, and it's not coaching.
Well, because otherwise, that's surprising.
That's the sort of thing that a manager. Yeah. He's got a point. You look at some of the mistakes that Liverpool have made, and they are. I mean, Colo Torre's own goal at Fulham is the best example, but I mean, there's nothing that a manager can do about that. It's just ridiculousness. And yeah, I mean, Swansea, I've seen a couple of times recently. Gary Munch got them. There's a bit more kind of impetus behind Swansea now. They're not a bad side at all. They were underperforming under Laudrup. The important thing for Liverpool is that they won. I don't think it really matters. They've only got 11 games left this season. I don't think it really matters how they win, as long as they win.
It always matters how you win.
No,
you're trying to build something, it always matters.
When you're trying to build something, yes, it does. But in Liverpool's very, very peculiar case, Liverpool, it's a bizarre incident. Because Liverpool are title contenders, and behind the front four really shouldn't be, basically. And they're in this situation now where they should finish fourth. They're 6 points ahead of Spurs. They should finish fourth. They can challenge for the title. All they need to do for that is to win. It doesn't matter how they win. They've got 11 games left. They've got no other distractions. In a lead that's this crazy, where all the other teams are so flawed, they may never get a better chance to challenge for the title.
I'm not sure I agree with you that the other teams are also flawed, but we'll get back
to
that.
Are they more flawed than Liverpool? Goals at
Liverpool, yeah. Liverpool are more flawed than all of them, but that doesn't mean that in this season, of all seasons, it means that they still have, that doesn't deprive them of a chance.
JP, I want to... go ahead. I'm sure what you're about to say is a lot more interesting than my question, so go ahead.
Well, I don't know. It was an interesting game. I was at Anfield yesterday, and it was a very interesting game from a defensive point of view for Liverpool, because it wasn't just that they are prone to an individual error, that they switched off defending set pieces, which is what one of the goals came from. But Brendan Rodgers, and this isn't an anti-Brendan Rodgers statement by any stretch of the imagination, but one thing that was noticeable was the amount of space behind Steven Gerrard, who's playing as the deepest lying of the Liverpool midfielders at the moment, but in front of Skrtel and Agger. And that was space that Shelvey was constantly exploiting. And you always sensed that Swansea were going to be able to score goals. Even when they were going 2-0 down, they were still creating chances. They were having efforts on goal. Agger was getting sucked into that space. Gerrard wasn't coming back to cover Shelvey, and it was something that Liverpool just had no answer to for a long time. And it's no surprise that when you look at the stats, yeah, they've got the best attacking partnership in the league statistically with Suarez and Sturridge. They've also now scored more goals than any other team, but they've only got the 10th best defence. Now, a side with the 10th best defence isn't going to win the title.
Well,
they are contenders, and I agree with everything that you say, that this is probably going to be their best chance, because in the grand scheme of things, whoever wins the title this year is not going to go down as vintage champions by any stretch of the imagination.
I want to circle back, though, to that Rodgers quote, because, I mean, you highlighted it as well, JP, that it's a defence. I mean, if there is space between your deep-lying midfielder and your centre halves, then you either push the deep-lying midfielder deeper or you play a higher line. That's generally the textbook answer.
Yeah.
And when he talks about individual errors, I don't know. I recall Rory's mate, Rafa, for example, being kind of a fan of one Daniel Agger.
And Skirtle, yeah.
Are Agger and Skirtle just terrible now all of a sudden? I mean, can we say that there isn't some kind of tactical or coaching responsibility? I mean, are you buying what Rodgers is saying? It's just like, oh, look, just these guys keep making errors. Nothing to see here. Nothing to do with the manager.
No, what I'm saying is it's probably an implicit criticism of Brendan Rodgers yesterday, in that it took a while to get that sorted out and to get the message onto the pitch that here was a problem, that the players didn't see it. It's more Liverpool's haphazard defensive record is more than just Kolo Touré slicing the ball into his own net or playing a square pass along the edge of the penalty area at West Brom. It seems to be about a sort of a bigger picture of an inability of players to track runners defending set pieces. They've had problems defending set pieces all season. This isn't a new thing. Of the kind of illustration of leaving that amount of space between the deep line midfielder and the back four that doesn't get sorted out. So whether that's down to Brendan and his coaching team or whether it's down to individual players not being able to make the necessary adjustments while the game is in running, I don't know. But it is a problem. As I say, it's more than just the defensive woes that Liverpool have is down to a lot more than just somebody doing one isolated daft thing. There's a bigger problem than that.
And maybe the thing that, you know, as Gerrard is playing this newfound role that everyone keeps learning about, but they keep talking about him while he's still as an attacking force from that deep-lying role. Perhaps what they should be focusing on is that he's not doing the defensive duties of that deep-lying role particularly well. That's what I get the impression from what Jim's saying. If there is that space still, it may be kind of dangerous to actually play that high line. So perhaps it is Gerrard should be the one dropping back a bit further. Well,
I think the broader issue, and Jim's absolutely right, is that yes, Liverpool do make individual mistakes at the back, but the problem is that they are being exposed. Defenders make individual mistakes. Defenders who we know are good. I mean, even Touré, I know he's become a figure of fun this season, but he's not. You know, he's got like a 10-year top flight record of being a pretty good defender. He's not some sort of clown. Defenders make mistakes, Gab. Is it not true? You're Italian. Defenders make mistakes when they are exposed to so much attacking play that they have the opportunity to make mistakes. If defenders have to do loads and loads of things, they will make mistakes eventually.
Yes, yeah, so that's generally the way it works. If you make a whatever percentage that is, if you put that situation more times, yes.
Yeah, you're more likely to make a mistake. So the problem is that Rodgers is probably right that a lot of it is stupid individual errors. Martin Skrtel's habit of hooding people when the ball comes into the box, for example.
He's an affectionate guy.
But he's a lovely man, but that suggests that they're being exposed to more than they should be.
And so it's a system thing.
So it's
also
thing.
Even this high line thing. I mean, Daniel Agger and Glenn Johnson, when he's on the pitch, are pretty quick players. Yeah. Like, you know, it's not like, oh, you can't play a high line ever. You know, if you do that, you know, if you squeeze, obviously they'd be better off if they have a legit defensive midfielder.
Well, they do, but he's injured.
Is Lucas, in your opinion, is he?
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Is he, like, I know obviously that's the position he plays, but do you think he is top four standard defensive midfielder type, or should they blow some of the Suarez money that they may or may not get this summer on him?
Liverpool need to have a big look at their back six. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a top class defender. I mean, someone like Javier Mascherano would walk into that team. Possibly as a central defender as well, actually. They need to look at that area. But Lucas isn't top four as it was, defensive midfielder, but top four as it is, he probably is, just about. Perfect.
JP, I want to ask you about Gary Monk. You talked about how, you know, they somehow looked better, I think, with him. I'm curious about this because we lavished so much praise on Michael Laudrup for so long. He left in reasons which I think are still a little bit unclear, unless somebody wants to tell
possibly
the inside story.
To him.
And possibly even to him, yeah. And then all of a sudden, this dude who I just remembered as kind of being a right back. Was he at Southampton really early in his career or something like that?
He was at Torquay. He started with my lot at Torquay, and he was in the worst Torquay side in living memory, although this one's doing its best to run him close. But so he started there, then went to Southampton where he didn't make the grade, to Barnsley, to Swansea, and I'm sure he freely admits himself, as a lower league player who kind of was in the right place at the right time and a good side. And many people think he's going to be a much, much better coach and manager than a player.
Based on what, though? I mean, on his two games? I mean, is he Laudrup-esque in his approach?
This is based on comments from Brendan Rodgers, from Martinez, people who've been talking him up, people who've worked with him, seeing what he's like as a captain, seeing what he's like in the dressing room and his ability to take ideas on board. I don't think that he is really doing anything at the moment other than trying to recreate the Brendan Rodgers blueprint at Swansea, which involves a higher intensity pressing game further up the field than Swansea were doing under Laudrup. And I think that is what is making it work for Swansea. That is what was creating the chances yesterday, getting them into decent positions. So I think basically he is Rodgers light at the moment, but will develop into a manager of his own ability if everything that people say about him is true. You can't judge him on what we've seen so far. An excellent performance at home to Napoli. They weren't bad yesterday, but they still let him four. He's won one game out of five. You can't judge him either way on that, but I think you can listen to the quotes of people that have worked with him and then, you know, extrapolate from that the fact that Swansea haven't made too many bad decisions. They made the odd one. They haven't made too many bad decisions in the recent past in terms of appointing managers. If they're prepared to give him a go, you'd have to say that that's a huge vote of confidence.
I want to wrap up with talking strikers. Daniel Sturridge has 19 league goals this season, which I think is just a phenomenal amount. But Wilfried Boney has also scored a lot of goals this year.
19 in all competitions.
And he started slowly.
Really slowly. I've been really impressed with Boney. I think he's on the quiet, become one of the signings of the season.
When he turned up, he was absolutely... I looked at this guy and thought, I like the look of this guy. He went a bit quiet after that, but then all of a sudden, I can't remember which game it was, actually. It might have been the FA Cup game. I thought, oh, he looks a real player. I wouldn't mind seeing this guy all the time.
When he arrived, the billing was that he was a Drogba type, based only on the fact that I guess he's from the same country as Drogba and plays the same position.
Drogba was much more.
He doesn't have the same
much
air
more
of men's,
naked raw Drogba, power.
Yeah.
I mean, Drogba was just
exactly.
Phenomenal.
Yeah,
and Boney's not in that league.
Boney doesn't bully. He's not going to bully a defence. He's not going to think, oh, there's. But his threat is far more subtle, I think.
But Drogba probably has, I mean, he's a better skill set. I mean, he's a better touch. And
Drogba?
Yeah.
He's a bit like an Asda version of Drogba.
There you go. I'm sure he appreciates that. All right, moving on, talking Euro 2016. Now, we have two options here. We can go through all the groups and you can all make your predictions, but no, we won't do that. Don't worry, Clive. You don't have to do that. Clive is reaching for his notes.
I can't even remember the groups. That's how memorable this draw was.
I thought the draw actually was memorable because it was great seeing all those old goalkeepers, up on stage. And I was shocked by how, you'd be familiar with Pat Jennings.
Pat Jennings hasn't changed one little bit either. It's fantastic.
It's weird. It's like
they should have done the draw out of one of his hands. He could have held all those. You know, wouldn't have needed.
But it's like he's a time travel. How does he do that?
Clive just stopped short of saying Pat Jennings should have held all of those balls.
Sorry, Pat, if you're listening, you know what I mean.
Is it like 1978 in the Jennings household every day?
How has he managed to stop time
like that?
There's loads of people from like footballers in the
side. I wanted to see it flap as he came onto the...
Jerry Francis. What the hell is going on with Jerry Francis' hair?
He takes that off at night and just puts it on.
All right, enough making fun of people's hair. You can have
Can I make a point about the Euro 2016 draw?
You can discuss Jean-Marie Pfaff, if you like.
I don't want to discuss Jean-Marie Pfaff. I just want to say that if you look through the groups, as Clive is doing now, it's really easy to say, oh, UEFA Platini's ruined the Euros, or 2014, blah, blah. And that's such a big country way of looking at things. If you look at some of those groups, it's the same with the Premier League. That the Premier League is six teams who can win it every year. Everyone else has to forget about it. It's the same with qualifying for major tournaments. That it's just the same 13 or 14 countries. They'll change a little bit at the bottom, the countries who are going to get knocked out all the time. It's fantastic to see that countries like Hungary and Romania might have a chance of qualifying. Turkey and the Czech Republic Germany's group or something.
Germany's group.
Or Spain's group. They will have a chance of qualifying. And that's These countries will have a chance of qualifying automatically for the finals. That's really important for making sure that as many countries as possible can be there, and it will help raise the standard of football in those countries. So yes, maybe this one will be a bit unwieldy and a bit rubbish, and some of the teams might be crap, but long term it's much better for those countries, important football countries, to be there. So I'm pro the 2014 Euros.
You're probably thinking, oh, look, I have an original idea. But actually, I subscribe 1,000,000% to what Rory says. And I know that goes against the general sentiment of this whole dilutes the competition, like, garbage that people throw out there. But
what does dilute the competition mean?
Well, if we have the same opinion, we can't really have a discussion, argument between us. Right. Anybody dare to disagree with us that this is actually a good thing?
Oh, silence.
See, this is what gets me, right? Because public opinion, generally, you get the impression by reading the media elites out there and the punditocracy that UEFA have ruined this tournament by, literally let the little people in, and who wants to see Gibraltar against the Faroes? Well, Gibraltar won't play the Faroes because they're they're in the same pot. But in reality, then, we can't get anybody to debate with, because actually I think there's a silent majority that's really, really not fussed by this. Am I wrong, JP?
I think that it's going to make the qualification process tedious.
Isn't it always tedious, though?
It's tedious anyway.
Like, exactly. But this doesn't help. That's what I'm saying. You know, if there's a little bit of jeopardy in the World Cup group, for instance, that England in an easy group contrived to make a mess of it. Were they going to qualify or not? Listen, all the established nations are going to get through to the European Championships in 2016 now with this format the way it is. So from that point of view, it makes it, in my mind, even more tedious than it has been before. The tournament itself, I totally agree with you, will be the richer for having sides, you know, countries, probably in some cases, who've never qualified for a major tournament.
Well, the other point about the tournament is that there are six or seven... Well, a couple of things. First of all, people are like, oh, how are you going to do it with 24 teams? You're going to have the best place, third place finishers. Well, you know what, guys? We had three World Cups like this between 86 and 94, and it was fine. You know, the sky didn't fall. But the other thing is, let's face it, there are maybe six good, really good footballing nations in Europe. And then there's between 7 and 20, 25. It's all pretty much the same. You've got nations who can show up to tournament and absolutely bite the big one and be awful. And you've got nations who can show up at tournaments like Czech Republic or Greece and actually be pretty good.
But
right?
It's
one of the peculiarities of UEFA in Europe.
The two things I'd like to know is, when was the last time one of the 8-9 major footballing nations didn't qualify for the Euros? Is it Holland?
England in 2008.
England in 2008.
Well, are you counting England among the...
Of the nine major European nations, yeah, we'll count.
So England 2008, the Dutch missed one, didn't they? Did the Irish knocked them out? Was that?
Yeah, that was Louis van Gaal.
Was that 2000? No, they were there in 2004.
2008, perhaps.
Or did they?
No, they were there.
Did they miss a World Cup?
They missed the World Cup.
They missed the World Cup.
Yeah,
but basically, all the major nations are there anyway. They never miss out, apart from England when Steve McLaren's in charge. They never miss out. But the other thing is that we tend to look at it, and you get, like Gab says, you get all these pieces saying, oh, these are terrible nations. We're not talking about Gibraltar and San Marino being there,
no.
Although they have a right to try and qualify. We're talking about Hungary and Romania being there. These are big countries.
And Iceland, who you know, this is the best generation of Icelandic footballers ever. Now they have a chance, and they've got a horrible draw, but they've got a chance of getting to a tournament for the first time. I'd love to see Iceland involved in a major tournament. And that, I think, is what this expansion is all about. Countries like Iceland having the potential to qualify for the first time.
Now, one of the things that that's going to be different this time around, Clive, is that UEFA have, with a great knack for naming things, they've introduced something called the Week of Football.
I'm going to try and explain this in a nutshell. It's basically going to work a little bit like the way that the Champions League works, in the sense that there will be games at set times. I think if you're in the UK, I think it's, what is it, 6 and 8 or something like that. And there will be games, and rather, unlike now where it's you know, staggered, where everybody plays on the same 2 days, I think Friday and Tuesday or whatever it is, there will be games every single day. And you'll still play twice and you'll still have 3 days rest in between. And I think it's great, because one of the things that annoys me is that, and turns me off in national football a little bit, is that on the same night, you have Germany playing, England playing, Spain playing, even somebody like me with my office full of televisions capable of catching every game in the world, I struggle to watch all those matches. Whereas now, if you want, you've got six clear, even if you only own one television, you've got six clear slots to watch games, and you'll be able to watch Germany or France or whoever you want to watch, you know, more regularly. Isn't that a good thing to promote international football?
Yeah, I was thinking that from our newspaper
point. I knew you as I asked you.
Yeah, even from our newspaper point of view, there are times where if all the games are on the same night, you know, I mean, let's take it from a home nation point of view, we're just concentrating on England. But if we're saying that actually in this new expanded qualification period, the Welsh and the Scots actually have a chance of perhaps doing something. In fact, Wales' group is looking great until the Belgians pop their heads up again. They would largely get ignored if they were playing on the same night as England. It was all going to be England. But now, as you say, we can do that. You know, you can have an England match report, and if some other country is playing on the next night, they get their chance of coverage too. And everything else is reduced to a roundup or something like that. We can, as you say, we can focus our attention on Germany or France.
Yeah, but I agree with you completely, but whether the public...
Whether, well, we don't
because
know,
they're
we're
not playing, they'll
chance.
Be bothered about Spain.
Well, but you know what? It doesn't. First of all, the Euro hipster nerds will still be interested, because you know they'll be like, "Ooh, it's Max Meyer." But beyond that, JP, you and I laugh at that, but those guys pay our wages. But I think beyond that, some football on television, international standard. I mean, is better than no football on television.
Yeah, of course,
right now, you basically cannot watch Spain or Holland or, you know, these guys that people want to watch.
Might do England quite a lot of good to actually watch all these other countries play football rather than just watching England. It might teach people a thing or two.
One of the best nights was actually those playoff matches for the World Cup. I mean, you say no one is anyone interested about England. Well, you know, were they playing on the same night? Well, is it that Portugal and Sweden were playing?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I watched that game. That was, you know,
that was riveting.
That was it. Yeah. So I think there is an audience for that.
When I was at Wembley, you didn't miss much.
All right, how about some quick hits? Everybody's favorite part of the show. And a reminder from our producer, Dave McGuire, please keep your answers to 25 seconds. Arsenal bounced back rather handily from their midweek defeat by spanking Sunderland 4-1, and Olivier Giroud steals the show. Rory, can we assume that his off-the-pitch issues are no longer going to affect him on the pitch?
Well, probably not, no, because we don't know how the mysteries of the human heart works. He looked like he benefited from what the Arsenal Twitter feed described as a mini-break, which I think is probably not quite...
I read that. By the way, you can, since we are cross-promoting here, Rory writes this humorous...
in inverted commas.
So what we've learned, is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's what it's called. But anyway, I think Giroud...
He makes reference to that. He's recycling it.
Giroud was struggling before the off-the-pitch issues. He was looking a little bit frazzled, a little bit sort of tired, a little bit leggy. He was very impressive against Sunderland. Hopefully that is him back, because he's an enormously important weapon for Arsenal.
Norwich and Chris Hughton had a bit of a rough ride of late, but Chris Hughton is one of the few people we like to call warriors of the light. He is a force for good, battling against evil in the world. And he got his just desserts against the evil Tottenham Hotspur by... not the evil. That's not nice. Clive's making a face. Okay. He got his just desserts against Spurs, getting all 3 points and a nice goal by Mr. Snodgrass. All well in the world then, right, JP?
Well, it's kept him in a job for another week. I think that had they lost to Spurs after the comments from Dave McNally, the chief executive, I think that Chris Hughton would have bitten the bullet. There would have been, you know, one goal in five games, no wins in five games, and slipping down the table quickly. But now Villa away, if they can win that, it looks completely different.
Speaking of Tottenham, their performance was downright hideous. Somebody retweeted something purportedly by Jan Vertonghen, who used a four-letter word saying, like, this game was well, and then this nasty four-letter word. I didn't then find out his tweet on his feed. I'm assuming he deleted it afterwards. But that's kind of what it was, right, Clive?
They were very poor, yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I assume let's try and put it down to the usual post-Europa League syndrome, because I think
the long trip tired them out?
Maybe.
To be fair, they had to fly into a war zone, right?
They've had, I think they've lost something like four or five of their batches that are immediately after Europa League games. So they're not handling, I mean, you could say when there was a break in that competition was when Sherwood actually did quite well. Suddenly it's back and they've got beat again. They, if Adebayor doesn't score at the moment, they seem to lack a bit of a goal threat. I'm still not quite sure whether he wants to, Sherwood wants to play him as a lone striker up there with the two. It was a hideous performance. Fourth place was always going to be hard. I mean, they were always destined to try and look as if they were going to finish fifth, and I think that's probably where they're going to be.
You're only 6 points out. Have faith. Wayne Rooney scores a peach of a goal as Manchester United win at Palace, but all the talk concerns Rooney's new contract. Rory, it's described as, quote, up to £300,000 a week. Isn't the up to part rather important? I mean, I'm assuming you make up to £300,000 a week. I know I certainly do. Can you tell me why people are getting so bent out of shape over it when it's, in fact, a lot less than Cristiano and Messi, and the club makes enormous profits, and most of the up to £300,000 a week involves bonuses performances?
Not most of it. I think he'll have a fairly substantial basic wage. But yeah, you're right that a lot
most of the
is,
increase.
Most of the increase will be incentive related. I'd always rather see the money go into a player than into a bank account for some sort of fat cat. Whenever kind of wages hit a new kind of threshold, people tend to kick off and say, oh, this is disgraceful. Soldiers aren't paid enough. Nurses aren't paid enough, that sort of thing. All of which are true. Probably, I don't know how much they earn, but certainly nurses aren't paid enough. And probably not soldiers. That's got nothing to do with Wayne Rooney. It's not like it's an either or, that you either give Wayne Rooney a £300,000 a week contract or you pay loads of soldiers loads of money. The bigger question for me is whether Rooney himself is worth it in the context of being a footballer. And I'm not sure he is. I think it smacks a little bit of desperation from Manchester United.
Hull City romp all over Cardiff away 4-0 with Jelovic scoring twice. JP, he and Shane Long have combined for 5 goals since the January transfer window. We were all saying that Hull were wonderful, but their strikers were awful. Now he's got 2 guys in. Was it really just a case about Steve Bruce sorting it out? And I assume they're staying up now, right?
They're going to stay up, undoubtedly. There are several.
So props to Steve Bruce?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
And Mr. Alarm? Dr. Alarm?
They were never as bad a side as people were making them out to be when they were on that long, struggling run. He identified the problem, which everyone else identified. They needed strikers. He signed 2, one of whom I'm a huge admirer of, and the other, I think, is okay. And Shane Long actually has been playing the junior partner. Jelovic has got more goals since he signed. I think Long's a tremendous acquisition for Hull. And yes, they will definitely stay up.
City huff and puff with Edin Dzeko producing a miss of the season contender, but finally overcome Stoke 1-0. Clive, was this just a case of Champions League hangover and maybe God punishing Pellegrini a little bit for his for the mean things he said in midweek, for which he apologised, to be fair?
He punished him very much. He still allowed them to take the 3 points at the end of the game. I mean,
punishment during the 90 minutes, seeing his team play like that?
It depends whether he's into a bit of sadomaso. He might have enjoyed that bit of pain for the time, but at the end of it, he got 3 points.
Yeah, Pellegrini down as an S&M guy?
You can see it in his eyes.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly.
If this had been a Chelsea performance, I suppose we'd have been saying, oh, look, they ground out a 1-0 win and everything would have been fine. I mean, they didn't play particularly well, but they got the 3 points. I think we just got sucked into this idea of City score 3, 4, 5 goals every week and suddenly they're not. I think it's only about 3 in the last 5 games or something. But they did win. And Negredo, he looks as if he's suffering a bit sort of Ozilitis as well. He looks like tired as well, actually. This idea of suddenly playing through Christmas and whatever seems to have caught up with him.
Gab, one for you. I hear it was a good weekend for Real Madrid in La Liga, the Spanish version of the Premier League. What happened?
The Spanish version of the Premier League with less crash, bang, wallop and more diving and cheating. Real Madrid won 3-0 against Elche. Gareth Bale scored a great goal. I don't know if that kind of turned the screws a little bit on what was to happen next, because Barcelona went out and had an absolute stinker against Real Sociedad. It looked to me like Tata Martino thought Real Sociedad were like the equivalent of Alcorcón or something in the 10th division because he made a bunch of changes. They played awful. They had Alex Song in midfield, who was terrible. Gerard Piqué was terrible, and then he got hurt. Everything was bad. They lost 3-1. It could have been 6-1. And then on Sunday, to make Carlo Ancelotti's weekend even better, Atletico Madrid lost 2 at Osasuna. Now, Barcelona and Real Madrid also didn't get points, haven't gotten points at Osasuna this season. But Atletico were definitely, definitely rather poor. And they've got the big derby coming up against Real Madrid next weekend, which could set things up nicely.
This confuses me because I thought that no one in Spain could beat any of the big three.
I know. Where else but in La Liga does that happen?
I know.
All right, that's all we got time for next week. My thanks to Rory K. Smith, Clive Petty, and from the lovely market town of Andover, it's Jim Proudfoot. It is a market town, right?
Yeah, you got that bit right.
A quick reminder that you can see the Game Podcast Roadshow live on March 6th at the Playhouse Theater in Liverpool. I can actually exclusively reveal the guest. Well, not really exclusively because we told you about him on Twitter, but there'll be two guys named Tony, both Liverpool fans, both Scousers, Tony Barrett and Tony Evans. And to balance it out, we have yet another Scouser, Peter Reed, coming in representing the blue half. Subtitles will be available for those from outside the region. Now, tickets cost £5 for Times Plus members, £7.50 for non-members. To book, visit www.ctickets.com/thetimes, or you can also call 0871-620-4025. We're going to be back next week. Till then, bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Hi, I'm Tim Montgomery, the presenter of another Times podcast from the opinion pages called Did You Read? It's the perfect weekly snapshot of some of the best writing in the newspaper. Find out more by heading to thetimes.co.uk/commentcentral and search Did You Read to subscribe on iTunes.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.